the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, it is that time of the year when people start thinking about taxes, and one of the best tax benefits out there, a nice deduction for everyone that works in the private sector, is probably your 401k program. But there are a lot of rules that are coming about with the Department of Labor. There are new regulations, there are new deductions, and they've increased the amount that you can put away in your program. Joining us on the program is Paul Horn from PFS Group. And Paul, just for our listeners, why don't we just get to the basics? What are the deductible amounts that one can put in a 401k for 2017? And what are some of the special allowances that they allow extra deductions based on age? I wonder if we can begin with that.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. So for any individual contributing to a 401k this year, $18,000 is the annual amount that they can put in. Now, if they are over the age of 50 and a half, they can add an additional $6,000. So someone over age 50 can actually put in $24,000 into their 401k this year.
Now, Paul, let me ask you, are there limitations? So let's say I'm 50 and a half. I'm putting in $2,000 a month, the $24,000, the maximum allowable. What if I work for an employer where the employer matches my contributions dollar for dollar? Could an employer put in $24,000 on my behalf?
Yeah, so that's actually a great question, Jim. Employers will often limit their amount that they will put in. It will either be most commonly a percentage of someone's income. So for example, they may match up to 6% of someone's contributions dollar for dollar. It may be something like I've seen at some of the banks where it's 10% match on a 401k, but only on half of the contribution. So there'd be a total of about 5% that they would put in. Now, on top of that, in profit sharing plans or at the company's discretion, they can make additional contributions into the 401k as well. The max amount of contributions that can be put into the 401k is $59,000 a year between employer and employee.
$59,000. Wow, that's a big amount. Paul, what are some of the other rules regarding 401ks? For example, you just talked about matching contributions, and you also talked about if an employer has, in addition to, let's say, a 401k program, they have something like a profit sharing plan, they can make additional contributions to the plan, bringing it up to $59,000. What are some of the other rules that our listeners should be aware of regarding a 401k?
Yes, there's a few things that they really should know. The first thing is whether their employer is offering the option of doing a Roth 401k versus a traditional 401k. The reason that's important is especially for our younger viewers or those in lower tax brackets, they can really benefit from the tax-free growth that the Roth 401k provides. On top of that, they really need to pay very close attention to the fees associated with their 401k. With the 401ks, it's a little bit more difficult. The fees aren't as clear to follow. Really, to understand the fees, the best thing to do would be to talk with your HR department or to talk with an advisor going through the plan prospectus, because the fees that you have are both associated with the 401k plan itself, and then you have additional fees on the underlying mutual funds or ETFs being used to invest in within the 401k.
So you have additional fees. For example, most 401k programs use what I assume, Paul, are mutual funds, because you can reinvest with them. So you have mutual fund fees. And isn't there an administrative fee, like whoever's doing the administration of the 401k, because it's unlikely that the company would do it, there are additional fees that are put on to, let's say, whatever fees you're paying for whatever investments you make?
Yeah, that's a great point, Jim. There's actually several parties that are involved in running a 401k. A 401k is subject to ERISA guidelines. The ERISA is a federal legislation that was passed decades ago by the DOL that oversees the 401ks. Within the ERISA guidelines, there is specific record keeping that needs to be done, and there needs to be what's called a TPA, a third party administrator, that makes sure the plan meets all of ERISA's requirements, make sure that there's not too much money going to those with the highest incomes and other items like that. And each one of those parties charge fees for their services. And then there's underlying fees as well for the investment management. So if you're using mutual funds, for example, you'll have an annual expense ratio that you're using. And what we've seen in some 401k plans is those fees can be up to about another 1% on top of whatever they're paying in the fees to their TPAs and record keepers.
I know that most 401k programs have a variety of various mutual funds, usually large cap, small cap, and international, maybe some bond funds and money market funds. But one strategy that is very popular, it's kind of like what we call the no-brainer. So let's say that I'm 50 years old and I want to retire in 10 years. So they have what they call these target date funds, a target fund that matures in 10 years, a target fund that matures in 15 years. And it's supposed to sort of put your 401k on automatic pilot. So ideally, in this case, if I was going to retire in 10 years, why wouldn't I want, let's say, a target fund that matures in 10 years? What's wrong with some of these target funds that are widely used in many 401k plans?
Yeah, so the target date funds within themselves were designed to really take the investment process and simplify it for most investors. In fact, it is the de facto option. So unless you choose other investments, typically that's what the 401k is going to automatically put their money into. When the employers make their contributions, for example, that also tends to go directly into a target date fund. With the target date fund, there are several disadvantages or challenges with them. The biggest one is that not a lot of people understand what that target date means. The target date is designed to be your retirement date. Some people think that's the date that they have to take the money out of the account. Other people think that's the date that the fund's going to run out of money. I've seen that be interpreted several different ways from clients throughout the years.
What about the investments themselves that are made in a target fund? So obviously, if you are 30 years away from retirement, you might be investing much differently versus if you were 5 or 10 years away from retirement. You might want to be more conservative. Are these funds typically more conservative invested? Maybe they have a higher fixed income component, treasury component versus 100% invested in stocks.
Yeah, and that's the really funny thing about these target date funds, Jim, is they're not standardized. So whether they're going to be too conservative for investor or too aggressive is really difficult to ascertain. But typically, it's not in line with a client's goals or risk that the client is looking to take. Because they're not standardized, just to give you an example, looking at a 2020 fund, so that would be ideal for someone that's going to retire within the next 3 years, which a lot of our listeners would probably fall somewhere into that realm. Just taking a look at the different target date funds out there from some of the largest providers, what I find is that one of those funds is a 50-50 mix of stocks to bonds. Another one of those funds is a mix of 30% stocks, 70% bonds. So it's really difficult to make sure that that is properly aligned with your overall risk objective that you're looking for. And with these target date funds, they are not managed. What happens is every so many years, typically about every 5 years, the funds will automatically decrease the stock holdings, increase the bond holdings. Jack Bogle, the CEO of Vanguard, has even chastised these funds, stating that they tend to be too conservative with the bond allocation, especially where we are with bond interest rates today and how that can impact negatively most investors.
You bring up an interesting point because we've seen the lowest interest rates in recorded human history. So typically, when you look at an allocation and you want to get more conservative, you would have a greater weighting to bonds. But given where interest rates are, and especially where they hit rock bottom last year, most people don't realize you can lose money by being in bonds if interest rates go up, as they are now with the Fed raising interest rates. So what are some of ways that individuals can make sure they diversify or make sure they have the proper asset allocation in their 401k? Because at least in my experience, a lot of times somebody starts with the company, depending on their age. Let's say you've been with the company 20 years. So you started with the company 20 years ago, you set up the 401k plan, and there was asset allocation mix that was picked at the time you joined the company. A lot of times these things are just put on automatic pilot and people really don't check them. In other words, they're in the same funds, the same allocation that they were today, that they were, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jim. And on top of that, oftentimes people don't rebalance their 401k. So that allocation they had 10 years ago, where it may have started 80% stocks, 20% bonds, may actually be closer to 90 or 95% stocks today, because how much stocks have outperformed bonds over the last decade. To better manage a 401k for a client, first thing they should be doing is making sure there's some sort of risk profile that they're using, either provided by the 401k administrator or from their financial planner, and then applying that using the different fund choices within the 401k. On top of that, there are two other options that they may want to explore. The first one is using what's called an in-service rollover. For older clients, oftentimes what they can do while they're still working at their firm is they can actually roll over a portion of their 401k to a financial planner. This can help provide diversification and advanced planning strategies.
When do they allow that? Is this something that most 401k plans allow their employees, or is it strictly in terms of how the plan was set up?
Yeah, so not every 401k plan is going to offer the in-service rollover. Where you find these most commonly are going to be for larger corporations that allow this. For example, most Fortune 500s have this feature. How much a person can roll over will be dictated by their years of employment, their age, and the amount in the fund within the 401k itself. So based on that, they can roll over anywhere. I've seen as low as 25% of the total plan assets. I've seen as high as about 75, 80% of the plan assets.
In terms of your years of experience dealing with clients doing financial plans, what are some of the main issues or problems that you see with 401k plans working with clients? In other words, what are some of the problems that have surfaced, if any, whether it's too much in fees, too aggressive of a plan? What are the typical problems you run into?
The biggest problem that I see is just the lack of management, or lack of oversight is maybe a better way of seeing that, of the 401k plan. As you had mentioned earlier, Jim, most of the clients do a set it and forget it strategy. And while taking a passive approach in itself is not a bad idea if that's the way the investor wants to go, what they do still need to account for is making sure that the allocation they've used matches their risk tolerance level, and also making sure they're rebalancing, whether that's on a quarterly or annual basis, where a lot of times that's not happening.
I know this is something that we've started at PFS Group, where we assist clients in managing 401k plans. But would you say that's probably the basic thing that most people do? You know, you get a new job, you sign up with the company, you set your withdrawal amount, whatever that is, a percentage or a dollar amount, you allocate it to a group of funds that you think are appropriate at the time. And then after that, you just don't look at it, because every month or every week or every 2 weeks, you get a paycheck. The money is taken out of your paycheck. It goes into the same funds and you don't think about it.
You're absolutely right, Jim. People tend to spend more time thinking about what they're going to do on the weekend than how they're investing their 401k. So that autopilot approach can be good, but again, it has to be done in the right manner, where there is a rebalancing strategy, where you are reviewing the statements, where you are checking to make sure that those allocations are matching your overall risk tolerance and, you know, align with your beliefs of the market. Now, what we can do as financial planners is we're not able to just go in and manage 401ks, but one service that we have provided to our clients to help them handle this, especially if they want to continue the more of that autopilot approach, is a consulting service where you can actually hire a financial planner or our portfolio management team in this example, and they can actually manage the 401k for you. When I say manage the 401k, they're not going to go in and place trades on a daily basis, but it's a consulting service that is provided where they can consult with you and help over time make adjustments, make recommendations based on where we are in the market cycle, what concerns that we're seeing, and provide a more active management approach and really make sure that 401k is being managed to the best of its ability.
Now, when you're taking a look at a 401k, and you mentioned earlier a Roth 401k, one of the things that strikes me about the Roth 401k is it's one way to get around the limitations that are placed on upper income individuals, because we know there is a phase out where if an individual is fortunate enough to make a high salary or even a bonus, they are not permitted under law to contribute to a 401k. Talk for a moment about the Roth 401k, because this is one way to get around not only that limitation, but also put a lot more money into a Roth versus the standard amount that's allowed each year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's surprising to me that more people aren't taking advantage of the Roth option. It has really increased in popularity in the last couple years, but it's really taken about a decade for the Roth option to take hold for most investors. What people don't understand, Jim, is like you said, that $18,000 or $24,000 annual limit, 100% of that can be put into a Roth account. Now, employer contributions, what the employee puts in by law has to be in the traditional account. So that bucket will always be filled by the employer. But as the employee, you can put in, again, up to that 18 or 24 mark. And the advantage to that Roth is the same advantages that you have on a traditional Roth IRA, where the money is put in after tax. So it grows tax free and it is not subject to the RMDs, whereas the traditional 401k is still subject to those RMDs starting at age 70 and a half.
Now, Paul, wouldn't this give an employee a lot more flexibility? Let's just make an easy example. Let's say that I would like to take advantage of the Roth because I'd like to have some tax-free income when I retire, and I don't want to be stuck with a high tax bracket with these required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half. So let's say I put $10,000 into a Roth 401k, knowing that that income is going to be tax-free. Now, the employer puts a matching contribution of $10,000. That $10,000 will be taxable, correct?
Yeah, that will be tax-deferred. So in retirement, that will be a taxable source of income. That is correct.
So this might be an ideal strategy from a long-term planning perspective. Let's say that you're Larry Lots of Bucks, and you know you're in a high tax bracket, but you also know that in retirement, you're probably also going to be in a high tax bracket. So one way to split this and give yourself some flexibility when you reach retirement is to, let's say, put money into a Roth 401k, which will be tax-free, and then use the employer contributions for your regular 401k contributions, which will be tax deferred until such time that you retire. I want to move on to another topic, and it's called net unrealized appreciation. Can you explain to our listeners what this is? Because it is a benefit for employees that work for companies, especially companies that are public and they get company stock as some form of compensation.
They're also known as, more commonly as NUAs, for the net unrealized appreciation. What the NUA is the ability to take company stock within the 401k itself, which a lot of individuals have, and then you can take that from a pre-tax account from the traditional 401k, move that into a taxable account. And what that does is that switches that portion of the money from, instead of being taxed at ordinary income rates, it's switched and taxed at long-term capital gains rates. And it's a strategy that I see is not used enough. A very good recent example is we helped a client who retired this past year. Their 401k was north of $1 million. And they had about $200,000 in company stock since they've been working at the company for over 30 years. What we did is we took a portion of that, we took $100,000 of that money, and we did convert that into a taxable account. So we took $100,000 out of the 401k, put $100,000 of company stock into a trust account for him. By doing this, what we did is we switched that $100,000 from long-term capital gains. In this example, the client was in the 33% tax bracket because of a pension they were going to receive for life. So we knew they're going to be at minimum 33% tax bracket the rest of their life. We switched this to long-term capital gains, and for this client, that's going to be a tax rate of 15%. Now, with the downside to the NUA is you're creating an unnecessary tax event, because traditionally with a 401k, you pay taxes when the money comes out of the plan. Well, in this case, that $100,000 is coming out of that plan at one time. So the cost basis is going to be treated as ordinary income in the year that you do the NUA. In this example, again, we did $100,000. The cost basis for the client was $22,000. The great thing about NUAs is oftentimes the companies will keep records on the cost basis. In this case, it was a company that kept very good records. So we were able to cherry pick and pick the stocks with the lowest cost basis. And that's what we used to do this anyway, to make sure that he's paying the smallest amount of taxes possible. So he pays ordinary income tax rates on that cost basis portion, and then the remaining balance went from ordinary income tax rates, in his example, 33%, down to 15% long-term capital gains rate. And given that at this point in history where we're at, the spread between the capital gains rate and ordinary income tax rates has never been so large, so it makes it advantageous to really consider the NUA option if you have employer company stock. Now, like I said, there are some limitations to this because it has to be done all in 1 year. So you can't just take the NUA and leave the rest of the money in the 401k. The rest of the money needs to be rolled over into an IRA or Roth or whatever the case is. And you are going to be paying income taxes on the cost basis of the amount that you take for the NUA.
So when you take a look at this typical 401k plan, which a lot of our listeners who are working in the private sector have, when do you recommend using a Roth over a traditional 401k? Is there a certain tax bracket, or is there a situation where you have a client like the one you just mentioned who's going to be in a permanent 33% tax bracket the rest of their life? This is one way of minimizing the taxes. So when do you recommend a Roth versus a traditional 401k?
In terms of when I recommend that, Jim, it is going to be on a case-by-case basis, so I hate to be vague. Some general guidelines you want to look at is if you're going to be in a high tax rate, we'll say in the 30s or above, and you're probably going to stay there for a long time or for the rest of your life, then the Roth option becomes less appealing. And the older you are, the Roth option also becomes less appealing. So for example, if you're 5 years or less from retirement, you may be better off doing a traditional contributions and then upon retirement doing Roth conversions. But if you're younger or in a lower tax bracket, the Roth absolutely makes sense. And even if you are close to retirement in the high tax bracket, it still can make sense to do Roth contributions. In the example we gave earlier, like we said, the gentleman was going to be in the 33% tax bracket for the rest of his life due to the pension. So making those Roth contributions lowered his future RMDs, which lowered his future taxes he was going to pay. So there's benefits there as well.
So as we sum up, looking at a 401k, let's say, Paul, I'm a small business. Maybe I have a few employees, or maybe it's a husband and wife team in a business. When does a 401k plan make sense for, let's say, a business owner?
Yeah, for a business owner, a 401k can be a very important tool in terms of employee retention, because a lot of times if a potential candidate is looking at two employers, one offers a 401k, a retirement plan, and another one doesn't, they tend to choose the one with the better benefits. And this is one of the best benefits that you can offer your employees. And as an employer, there's also higher contributions amounts that you can take. So for example, compare a SEP IRA to a 401k. SEP IRA, the max contributions you can make are 25% of your income, capped at $53,000. So the most you can put in a SEP IRA in any given year is $53,000, where with the 401k, like I said, that limit is $59,000. So it's a higher amount that you can put into the account. So as an employer, we use 401ks often as ways to help shelter income, take advantage of the tax deferral, and also as a way to help hire and retain top talent.
Final question. The Department of Labor has put some rules regarding pension plans, 401k plans. I wonder if you might explain briefly the new laws, how they work, and the implications for our listeners.
Yeah, so the DOL has created the fiduciary standard for all retirement plans. So what this is in practice, it's going to create better accountability for retirement plans in terms of make sure the costs are low and making sure the investments are proper investments for their clients. So in theory, this is a great idea. Some of the challenges with it is when you implement a new law, there means there's a lot of changes that are done in terms of reporting, changes that need to be made in terms of make sure they're adherent to the new laws. With these changes comes increased costs. And what I've been seeing with a lot of TPAs, third-party administrators, is they're charging higher fees in response to this DOL. And what's happening is the employer is not paying these increased fees. They're just passing those on to the employees. So right now, while the DOL is great in concept and something, you know, I think could be beneficial, it is creating a higher fee environment for individuals.
So, Paul, if you were to sum up some key things that our listeners should be made aware of in terms of 401k, what would they be?
In terms of the 401k, number one, make sure you understand your plan and you understand the different advantages that your plans can offer. So if you're an older worker, you want to make sure and see if they offer an in-service rollover option. With the 401k, you also want to be aware of the Roth versus traditional, what are they offering? You always want to make sure that you're making as much contributions as you can into the 401k within reason, but don't ever leave money on the table. So what I mean by that is if your employer's offering a 6% match, at least put in that 6% because that's a 6% raise that your employer's offering you that you may not be taking advantage of. The other thing to keep in mind too with the 401k is making sure that it is matched to your investment time horizon and your risk tolerance. Whether you do that with a plan administrator or some financial advisor that's linked to the plan or another professional, you want to make sure that you have a professional that is looking and making sure that what is set up matches what your needs are. And over time, that is continually being monitored.
Well, listen, Paul, as we close, if our listeners would like to get in touch with you regarding planning or 401k advice, how could they do so?
Yeah, absolutely. I can be reached. My email is paul@paplava.com. That's paul@paplava.com. Or our phone number is 888-486-3939. Again, that phone number is 888-486-3939.
Paul, well, listen, thanks for joining us on the program. All the best to you, and come back and talk to us again.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks, Jim.
You know, as you get ready to file your tax return, once again, I hope if you are working for an employer, you are putting money into a 401k plan, because as we've talked on previous programs, when it comes to tax planning, a 401k plan contribution is what we call a deduction above the line. It reduces your adjusted gross income. So that's one thing that you want to do. Secondly, as Paul mentioned, you may be working for a company that has matching contributions. So if you're not putting money in a plan, you're walking away from free money that your employer is putting in a plan on your behalf. And then probably the third thing I think is really important is make sure, and especially if you're getting close to retirement, the extra amount that you can put into a 401k plan, the extra $6,000, which can take your contribution limit from $18,000 to $24,000. And then finally, really take a look at how you are allocating your investment funds. Does your 401k portfolio match your risk tolerance or your objectives and goals? And especially for many of you who are 5 or 10 years away from retirement, you might want to look at your 401k, and especially as we get closer towards the end of a business cycle and we get into, let's say, the next recession or bear market, you don't want to be fully invested in stocks. So it may behoove you to start paying more attention, because this could be the major asset that you live on when you are retired. Well, hope you got a lot out of that. There's a lot of interesting things, a little twist on 401k plans a lot of people aren't aware of, especially that NUA thing that we talked about, or in-service rollovers. There are a lot of things, especially if you're working for a larger corporation. Anyway, hope you got a lot out of this, and hope this can help you reduce your taxes this year. In the meantime, until we talk again, I hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Paplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.